Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Özil. Marca Mesut Özil. Ahí está el córner. Gol Gabriel Paulista. Marca el primero para el Arsenal. El córner que sacó Mesut Özil.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from the sometimes used Gunner blog. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, the erstwhile. Is that a word? Does that mean something?
It does. It does mean something, but I'm not sure it has any relevance in this context.
Well, it's good to get it in, though. It's one of the words that probably feels a bit underused, so
yeah,
squeeze it in where we can.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. How's it all going? How was your Christmas?
It was lovely, yeah. It was festive, despite the rain. Rain is the least Christmassy weather, I've decided. Ideally, you want a sort of crisp, cold, sunny morning, or you want snow. Rain is sort of falls somewhere in between, doesn't it? It's not quite what you're looking for. But that aside, it was all good.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, it rained here heavily on Christmas Day, pretty much all day. So I agree with you. It's like, oh, God, stay inside kind of weather. But it still makes it all a bit more miserable. But no, very, very nice and ate well and drank well and all those things, you know.
What did Santa bring?
What did Santa bring? I got a pair of trainers.
Hey, I got a pair of trainers.
Yeah, Adidas.
Nike I got. Oh, my God. Oh, it split the camp.
It's the butter and jam and toasting all over again, but in footwear.
There we go. I mean, at least, you know, mine have some sort of Arsenal connection. I should have Pumas, really, shouldn't I?
Hey.
These days.
Well, you should. Do you remember the old ad, Robert Pires and Sylvain Wiltord with Mapumas?
Mapumas.
Mapumas.
Yeah, I didn't get Mapumas this year.
But I have a pair of those. Red leather Robert Pires Mapumas. Yeah.
Do you wear them, or are they sort of in a display case?
I used to wear them, but then I discovered that Puma, whatever way they make their footwear, the sole is really narrow. And I found that with their football boots as well, that they have a very narrow sole. Mm. And it doesn't really suit my foot, so I need something a bit wider. And I find that Adidas, who are in no way sponsoring me to say this, but from whom I will gladly accept gifts if they're willing to do that. They suit my feet a lot better in terms of trainers and also football boots.
Okay, so if anyone from Adidas out there is listening, as you remember from last week, it's 1 Dublin Road, Dublin.
That's it. Get it in there.
So my Christmas was pretty good until Boxing Day. And then, of course, it all went awry, didn't it?
Awry is a good word as well. That's a word that isn't
used. Getting
them
all in, guys. I got a dictionary for Christmas.
I got a thesaurus, so I'll just try and counter everything you say with a different kind of word. But it didn't go very well. I mean, we'd had Christmas dinner too. It was lovely. You know, came back home, lit the fire, sat in front of the fire with my laptop, TV on. Because 7:45 is a bit of a shit time for a game on St. Stephen's Day, as we call it here. We don't call it Boxing Day because we're lovers, not fighters in Ireland. That's the thing.
To be honest, I don't really know why it's called Boxing Day. I'm not sure anyone does. Is it to do with boxing? Is it to do with putting things in boxes?
I think it's to do with what the hell do I do with all these boxes that I got with my Christmas presents in? And it just, you know, there was a plethora of boxes.
Come on, put the thesaurus down. What's going on? I mean, the thing is, that's a stupid question. What to do with all the boxes? Obviously build a fort.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Clearly. If you have a super abundance of boxes, then you need to do something with them. And I think that's probably what it was. It's better than Fort Day. So Boxing Day works an awful lot better. And that's what happened. But yes, getting back to the football side of things, I was sitting there in front of the fire thinking, this is grand. Have a beer beside me. Got the laptop, doing the live blog. And then it was shit. Mm. Really bad.
Really bad. As bad as it's been for quite some time.
I mean, it's kind of weird, isn't it? Because when things go well, people go, well, that's the way they should be. That's how it should be all the time yeah. when things go well. And when things go bad, it's like, well, this just encapsulates everything that's wrong with us. Every single possible thing that we complain about is manifested itself in that performance. So there's a touch of, you know, going from one extreme, well, from no extreme, because when we're winning, there isn't really an extreme.
It's just serene, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's just, well, it's obviously just, it should be that way.
It's calm and nice and good, and I think we all enjoy that. I mean, there are people who think after every win that this is evidence of our greatness, our ascension into the pantheon of football teams. This is fucking good with the thesaurus here. But, you know, for the most part, people, I think, have a level-headed approach to it. But when we lose, it's like, fuck, Jesus Christ. And, you know, when we lose the way we did, I can understand it to a certain extent.
And at Christmas, Andrew, of all times.
How bad?
Christmas.
They let all the children down, James.
We'd all been very naughty this year.
Clearly.
And, yeah, that was our little sack of coal that we were handed in footballing form. That ball at Southampton was packed full of coal.
Mm. We played badly, right? Absolutely.
We didn't play well. I'll come with you on that. Yeah, we played really badly. I think it was our worst performance in maybe since the last time we were there.
I agree, yeah. Maybe we should just never go there again.
I mean, you know, maybe it's cursed.
I don't believe in curses, but maybe we should just not turn up next year and go, look, have the 3 points, we'll have a rest. We'll take it easy. We'll relax our legs and get ready for the next game. You know, I think.
Well, I think if you don't turn up to a game, I think you get a 3-0 automatic defeat. So we'd actually get a superior result that way.
Yeah. And without any of the stress and hassle of having to endure a performance like that. So, yeah, there's a suggestion for next year.
What do you
year.
Make of the margin of the defeat? Like, do you think that means something? I was interested to see a stat floating around that only two sides have ever lost by 4-goal margin in a single season and then gone on to win the league. Well, do you think it sort of tells you something about us that it went that badly?
I don't know. I mean, look, I think that's... I don't know about that stat. It's like one of those stats you get that where they say, well, when one player is on the pitch, a team hasn't conceded a goal for 7 years.
Hang on, are you casting aspersions over Mathieu Flamini's unbeaten record at the Emirates Stadium?
Perhaps I am, yeah.
Okay.
You know, I'm just saying, yeah, I don't think it's relevant. You know, it's a thing and it's a fact, but I don't think it has any bearing on what might happen this season. I think as well we were a touch unlucky as badly as we played. I thought the second goal was a very obvious foul on Lauren Koscielny. Actually, in fairness, that's wrong. It wasn't an obvious foul. It was quite a smart, clever foul on Lauren Koscielny. And without that foul, I don't think Shane Long would have scored.
I mean, the whole Shane Long thing was kind of unfortunate because had he been fit, you'd think Graziano Pelle would have been playing. And actually, they had to play Shane Long and it gave us loads of problems because with him and Mane and their pace on the break, you know, it really hurt us. They were really exposed against them several times.
He's a really irritating player, Shane Long. I mean, in a way, I kind of admire it. And I admire, to a certain extent, the foul on Koscielny because, you know, why the hell not? I think Koscielny, he'd had a couple of run-ins with Koscielny before and he ended up with a bit of a cut on his head because Koscielny had come through the back of him, you know, as a centre-half should do. And Long went, well, fuck it, I'll give it a try. And if I get called for a foul, I get called for a foul. But if I don't, look at what could happen. So in a way, you kind of have to admire that.
His plucky entrepreneurial spirit. Yeah, but I mean, I think the first three goals, Arsene Wenger was quite keen to point out after the game, there were debatable decisions, weren't there, at least?
I didn't really see what was debatable about the first one, to be honest.
Was it potential offside, or did you not think it was? I forget now, to be honest.
And when the cross came in?
Yeah, I think when the cross came in, the first cross before the clearance. I mean, what you would say is, well, when it's cleared, is that another phase of play? And do you have to react to that accordingly? You know, I think you said on your blog that you were a bit disappointed about how easily the cross was allowed into the box.
Yeah, I thought we could have done more there.
Yeah. I mean, look, the thing is, despite all these little gripes with the officiating, I don't think you'll find an Arsenal fan who would argue that we deserved anything from that game.
No, it was poor. It was like opening your Christmas stocking and finding your dog's foot in it.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Your own dog's foot?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. So the dog is still going around on Christmas morning, but just with one less foot as well?
No, the dog has been kidnapped. You don't know what's happened to the dog. And right. all of a sudden, you know, they're going to send you like another paw in the post. And
if you don't pay the ransom, and the tail's coming tomorrow or something like that.
You know, that's how bad it was.
Christ.
Yeah. Not bad.
That is bad. But what was I going to say? Yes, we were rubbish, but why?
That's a really good question. I think if you could figure out exactly why, you would be able to write a book on that, sell it to all football managers, and make a bazillion million pounds. Because
you've seen my business plan for 2016, I see.
I think, you know, it's as frustrating and as annoying as it is, I don't want to say things like that can just happen, but sometimes a game goes against you or goes away from you, or you get into a position in a game where it just becomes impossible to get anything from it. And I think you have to look at the depth of the squad or the lack of depth in the squad. You know, at 2-0 down, okay, it's difficult, but you know, we didn't have anything on the bench really that we could bring on to change the game around. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain came on and was in some ways culpable for the third goal. You know, so that's an issue, I think, for me, is that we just did not have anybody to bring on who could change the dynamic of the game and maybe inject some life into our performance.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, do you think it was the wrong decision on reflection to play the same 11 that faced Manchester City?
No, because we talked about this before, didn't we? We thought that what he would do was play that strongest 11 against Southampton away and then change things around a bit for Bournemouth at home, which he kind of did. So I don't know that you can really... I don't think there's any criticism to be made of the team selection. You know, it had just beaten Manchester City, played well that night, and that team that did so well lurched from, I won't say the sublime, but certainly to the ridiculous in terms of performance level. And I don't know that there's any real understanding of why that would be, you know, beyond genuine human frailty and just the vagaries of sport.
The vagaries of sport, eh? Foiling us again at every turn. Well, I mean,
fucking vagaries.
The bloody vagaries. It was poor. It was really disappointing. It was a really bad result. And I think that was compounded by the fact that, you know, Leicester had lost that day, hadn't they, at Liverpool?
Yeah.
There was a chance to go top of the Premier League. And there have been a few of those in the last sort of 6 weeks or so that we haven't been able to take. But fortunately, another one rolled around very, very quickly indeed.
Yeah, well, this is it. You know, I mean, it felt, some of the post-match reaction felt like we might never have the chance to go top of the league again, when in reality, if we beat Bournemouth, we would go top of the table, you know?
But BT Sport didn't have that game. So, you know, they were keen to emphasise that this was our one shot.
They really were, weren't they?
Yeah.
It was bizarre. The third goal, just in particular... they were talking about zonal marking, and Glenn Hoddle was saying, oh, zonal marking, you know, this is the thing, you know, why aren't the centre half... And then they had another corner immediately afterwards, and Glenn Hoddle was shocked, like shocked, that we were continuing with a zonal marking system instead of changing our entire defensive plan in the middle of a game. I mean...
It's extraordinary. They've just conceded a goal, and yet... They're keeping Petr Cech between the sticks. They haven't swapped him with one of the outfield players to try and address the situation. Really odd. Robbie Savage completely bemused by what zonal marking even was, I think.
Yes, he had no clue whatsoever, did he?
He just couldn't understand why certain players hadn't made certain movements or certain runs. I mean, look, it wasn't well defended particularly. I mean, it was one of those where you wondered if the keeper maybe could have come and got it, but it was quite congested. But it was also a good delivery and a good header, so... To an extent, you've got to sort of say, fair dues.
Mm. Anyway, fuck that game. Fuck it.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Fuck it. And it's gone, and we did
put it in the boxes, all the boxes that are lying around for Boxing Day.
Yeah, I mean, every fort has to have a dungeon, so we put it in the dungeon, in the fort, right?
Lovely. Lovely idea.
And we'll never visit it again. Or we'll put a smaller box with something slightly less worse in there next time that happens.
Okay.
All right.
Good plan.
So, Bournemouth...
Bournemouth, yes. 48 hours later,
less
bounce back.
Less than 48 hours.
Less than 48. 46?
Yes. Yes.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, it really was.
Yes, much better. I mean, not a great start to the game from us, you know. But then a lot of the times these games are quite stodgy, aren't they? Because players are tired, teams are a bit unfamiliar, there's a lot of rotation, there's not necessarily that slickness in performances. But, I mean, how long are we going to go without talking about the one man who really made it all click? And that, of course, was Mesut Ozil.
Oh, was it? I thought you were going to say someone else there.
Well, I did think that when Joel Campbell came on, he was pretty instrumental.
He was amazing, wasn't he? Just absolutely outstanding, creatively, his overall contribution to the performance, how hard he worked defensively. Just an amazing performance. Some of the chances that he created for us were brilliant. And with better finishing, we would have won that game handsomely.
Yeah, indeed. We're looking at you, Theo Walcott. But it's set-piece delivery as well, I think, was some of the best I've ever seen from an Arsenal player. I don't know if he just had his eye in particularly on this day, but every time we got a corner, I think we were helped in part by the fact that Bournemouth were slightly hapless in their defending of those set-pieces, but he seemed to pick out Gabriel Mertesacker at will, really.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, was there a light bulb moment on the Arsenal training ground at some point over the last, you know, 18 months where they went, hey, you know what? If we take a corner and instead of hitting it directly onto the head of the first man at the near post, what if we like put it into a more dangerous area? And lo and behold, you know, we score more regularly from corners and set pieces than we used to.
It's a phenomenal success rate. Oh, my doorbell's just gone.
Do you want to go see who that is?
I better. One second.
Hello, you're back.
I'm back.
Anyone interesting?
It's my cleaner.
You're what?
I know, it's not my idea, I must stress. I'm actually quite sort of awkward about the whole thing, quite uncomfortable with it. But my landlord has a cleaner who comes, usually later than this.
Right.
So this has caught me off guard.
Okay.
Who knows, is she going to feature in the podcast? It'd be nice to get Jivka on, she's lovely.
Yeah?
But we'll see. I mean, I don't know what her views on the Bournemouth game will be.
I don't know, but I mean, you could maybe ask her not to hoover for the next 40 minutes or so. That'd be great.
Yeah, that could be good. Let's see what happens. I probably should have mentioned that. Let's see how that goes.
Okay.
So what was I talking about? Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, good. He's good at football.
Yes, he is. Yes, I'm beginning to think so. I mean, the jury are deliberating still, as we know, thanks to David Moyes. But I feel like, you know, their decision may be announced sooner rather than later that he might be good at football.
Yeah, imagine the dismay that David Moyes must feel. When the jury comes back with his decision, have you reached a verdict? Yes, Your Honour. And he's good at football. No! I bought Fellaini!
Yeah, no, that is an unfortunate thing to have done. But it was quite an extraordinary performance. And I thought, you know, we didn't play that well, but it sort of didn't matter at times because he was just able to do things, you know, almost single-handedly.
Yeah, great header from Gabriel for the first goal, and I thought he played very well overall. He was a threat in the opposition box. There was that moment where he headed off the post and it rebounded onto Mertesacker's forehead and just wide, which was. I felt sorry for him, but it was also really quite funny because the look on his face when it went wide was something else.
It was one of those he couldn't have done too much about, really. It came out in pretty quickly. But nevertheless, it'll look great on a bloopers video. Gabriel, I think we've talked in the past about him being an aerial threat at set pieces. He really does attack the ball very well. But I thought he was excellent at both ends of the pitch. There was that one chance, I think at the start of the second half, where Josh King kind of, he looked like he might have been offside from where I was sat, but he got away from the back four. And it looked very, very dangerous, but Gabriel recovered brilliantly with a sliding tackle to sort of intercept the ball. And I thought, yeah, he was very, very solid.
Yeah, had a really good game. And he has been sort of on the fringes a bit since the Chelsea game, since the sending off. He hasn't really been in the team that much. And then, of course, he played. Where did he play and make a mistake?
I don't know. Can't remember.
I can't remember either. Maybe Bayern.
Oh, Bayern away. Yeah. He stepped up at the wrong time or something like that, and Lewandowski scored the header.
Yeah.
I think that was the one.
Yeah, he had a couple of difficult moments, but that was a really, really solid performance from him yesterday, and a very encouraging one, too. So yeah, then,
Go on. So what else can we talk about?
We could talk about that second goal, because that was really very tasty.
It was delicious, wasn't it? It was the most delicious goal. It was like it was a Christmas dinner of a goal.
It was a Christmas ham
of a goal.
Yeah, a Boxing Day dinner where you get all the meat again cold and it's even more tasty.
Bit of bubble and squeak, all that jazz. Yeah, love that. It was an incredible goal. And I think, obviously, we'll talk about Ozil, but I do think Olivier Giroud deserves credit for the latest in a line of sumptuous flicks.
Yeah, he tries them often. And, you know, maybe it'd be fair to say that more often than not, they don't come off. But when they do, I mean, the weight of that ball through to Ozil, who continued his run, was just absolutely perfect. And I think there's a salutary lesson there.
Yes.
But his first touch, just absolutely perfect. Just killed the ball, and then he rolled it between the goalkeeper's legs. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant goal.
He passed it into the net. He assisted it into the net.
Yeah, he really did. Do you know what I have? I have some of the Spanish commentary.
Oh, go on.
On the goal. Because, you know, people who listen regularly to the show will know that we've got the... here we go. Hang on. Okay, we're in the build-up here.
Daniel, vaya perdida de balón. Vamos a ver Osley.
Okay, this is Ramsey.
Ramsey, Mesut Özil se da la vuelta. Mesut Özil con metros por delante. Entrega para Aaron Ramsey. Ramsey, otra vez para Mesut Özil. Mesut Özil llega a la frontal. Ahí está Giroud. Aparece con Özil. ¡Qué golazo! ¡Qué golazo del Arsenal! Marca Mesut Özil. La pared con Olivier Giroud. Para culminar el partidazo del alemán. Llega el segundo gol del Arsenal.
Yes, really good. Qué golazo.
Qué golazo indeed.
Yes, marvellous.
Yes, I mean, it was indeed un golazo. And did you like that on there? That was one for the Santi Cazorlas of this world.
Yes, yes. You spent time in Spain, right. I sense.
Well, I've done a GCSE, so don't worry about it, guys. It was a brilliant goal. And, you know, he took it very, very well, very composed for a guy who's obviously not regarded as principally a goal scorer. But he should have, he should have broken Thierry Henry's Premier League assist record for a single season in the course of that game, shouldn't he? I think it was 9 chances created, something crazy like that.
Yeah, and when you look at where those chances were and the quality of the ball to the players in those positions, they were absolutely brilliant. I think they were pretty much, every single one of them inside the Bournemouth area. And, you know, I think Walcott in particular should have scored at least 2.
Yeah.
At least.
I think Walcott had actually a decent all-round performance. It's interesting, since he's been redeployed on the flanks, I think he's redoubled his defensive efforts a bit.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a bit of instruction or just, I don't know, his attitude maybe has improved. But he was back helping out the fullback in areas against Bournemouth where you would never have caught him, I think, 12 months or so ago. So that's encouraging, definitely. But his finishing wasn't quite there. Just on Ozil, something I think that's really extraordinary about him. I mean, he's obviously, you know, the form player in the Premier League, probably the best player in the Premier League at present. But you know, the aesthetics of his game are often commented on, but he is a phenomenal athlete as well. In December, I think he played 90 minutes in all but one game, in which he played 85. This guy invariably plays the entire match. He's not someone who comes off after 20 minutes. Arsene leaves him on because of that technical stability that he craves. And I just think he's still running come stoppage time. He's still going. It's perpetual movement. He's always looking for space, always offering an option to somebody. And I do think that element of his game is sometimes overlooked, understandably, amidst all the technically brilliant things that he does. But he deserves huge credit for that.
No, I think so. And I think what it is as well is that I think it's perhaps his style, in that he's quite a... He tends to sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here, to kind of float over the ground. He's not like an obvious sprinter. You know the way when Carl Jenkinson sprints, it looks like a player from FIFA. You've got the R2 button held down and Jenkinson is like, arms are going ding, 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 ding. Whereas Ozil kind of glides across the pitch and he's a very languid style. And I think people mistake that for lack of effort or lack of interest in some way. But I absolutely agree with you. I think the amount of running that he does off the ball, looking for space, looking to keep the team moving. He works hard. Like last night, he attempted 6 tackles, which I think was as high as anybody else in the Arsenal team. He only won 2 of them, but the fact that he was there doing that speaks volumes about the contribution that he makes to this side. He's just a fantastic player. There's no question about that, but a fantastic player in certainly the best form that he's been in since he joined the club.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And as you know, we've said it in the past, but without Alexis Sanchez, without Santi Cazorla, the onus, the responsibility on him is enormous, and he's absolutely delivering. I think he's now created 79 chances in total this season. The Arsenal player with the next closest amount is Cazorla with 36.
Jeez.
I know Cazorla's been injured, but, you know, Aaron Ramsey, 22, and Mesut Ozil, 79. That is just a phenomenal number.
Yeah. It really is. And I think just going back to what you said about him being taken off and the technical stability that he gives you, when he did take him off against Manchester City because he'd been ill, I think we missed him in those final 10 minutes. And I don't know if it's coincidence or not, but that's when City scored and made it a bit more tense and nervous for the final few minutes.
Yeah, because, you know, Arsene spoke about Ozil after the game at some length. Almost the entire post-match press conference was dedicated to his performance.
Yeah.
And he was saying how the genius of Ozil is that when you watch from the stands, at the moment you think, oh, the pass should be played there, that's when Ozil plays it, if not just before. His decision-making is so good. And in that last 10 minutes against City, Arsenal needed someone with that kind of cool, collected, intelligent head to help them keep possession. And without him, they didn't have it.
Mm.
Nonetheless, what else can we say? Because Arsene's press conference was so dominated by Ozil, there were a couple of things he didn't touch on. One thing I was going to talk about was Callum Chambers, who I thought acquitted himself rather well in central midfield.
I agree. I think, you know, clearly we haven't seen enough of him in that position to make any kind of real judgment on him as a midfield player.
No.
But I think it's interesting that stories have emerged over the last couple of weeks about how they've been working in training with him to sort of ready him for a midfield role. And I guess that's, you know, a lot of trying to receive the ball with your back to play and all that kind of stuff. I thought he was really tidy on the ball. He spread it wide well a couple of times. He's got quicker feet than people give him credit for also.
Yeah.
He did well in there. I think we need to see more of him, but I think that was an encouraging performance from a player who kind of needed it. You know, his career, I won't say it had hit a wall, but he'd sort of had a good start and then plateaued, and then it was difficult to see where exactly he fit into the team. He was in the squad as like fourth choice center half. Injuries have played a part, so obviously he's been deployed in midfield. I thought he did really well.
Yeah. Oh, one second. Hello? One sec. Hey there. Thank you very much. Hello, mate.
Well, there you go. She's on the podcast now.
Yeah, she's made it.
I'm gonna have to leave that in.
Of course. Nice to get Zivkar on, as I say. What was I talking about? Callum Chambers. Yeah. I mean, this is a bit of a dirty word, but he reminded me a little bit of Michael Carrick in there. You know, someone who's not particularly quick, but who distributes the ball well. He's got a bit of height, a bit of elegance, but crucially, he doesn't have all those Manchester United and Spurs ties. So,
yeah,
a little bit better. But, I thought he did well, and I thought it was encouraging. I wouldn't hail him as the solution, but if you think about it, I think he's probably better on the ball than Flamini. I think he's probably a better passer than Flamini. He's taller than Flamini. So, you know, there's definitely something to work with there, potentially moving forward.
Yeah, certainly, you know, to have another option is a good thing, given the way that the midfield is stacking up right at this moment in time. And, you know, there was some talk about Ramsey before the game in conversation with the club doctor. So whether or not he's carrying a knocker, I don't quite know. But, you know, we're in a position at this moment in time where central midfielders are a very precious commodity, which leads me to the stories that have been doing the rounds about FC Basel's Mohamed Elneny. Is that how you pronounce it?
I assume so. Certainly Mohamed, that's familiar enough.
Yeah, that's good. We know that. Could it be Elneny?
Elneny? I think in my head it's Elneny. And if it's in my head like that, why would it possibly be wrong?
Correct.
I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. I know next to nothing about this guy. And I suspect that anyone who says otherwise is either Swiss, Egyptian, or a fibber.
That's three distinct possibilities there, absolutely.
Three groups of people I have no time for.
What's right? Come on.
No, the Swiss, the Egyptians, and the fibbers. Oh, they're the bane of my life.
Well, well done. You've just isolated a huge portion of our listenership there. I love the Egyptians and the Swiss, but fibbers, I'm with you.
Playing to the crowd, as usual.
Absolutely.
Look, it's an intriguing one. I think the most encouraging thing about it is how quickly the deal appears to be done. We've talked, you know, for years now about needing players in January, and then come deadline day, we're still sat there waiting to see if we can snatch a bargain. If we do go out and sign someone in the first few days of the window, I think that represents real progress and shows really good, positive, decisive action on the part of the club.
Yeah, we're snatching a bargain early.
I know. Imagine
what do you make of, people will, as ever, there'll be people on both sides of this signing if and when it goes through. Some will say, well, look, this is a young guy who's ready to take a step forward in his career, 23 years of age, been playing well for FC Basel, and FC Basel have been really good over the last 12 to 18 months, maybe a bit longer. So he's playing well for a decent team. There are others who will say that a club like Arsenal, with the resources available to them, should probably be looking at somebody more established, be ready to spend a bit more money. Where do you sit on that particular issue?
I mean, I think expedience will have been a factor. I think the fact that this is a deal that Arsenal felt they could do and could do quickly. I don't think... Sorry, Andrew, my phone's going. I'm going to have to go and see what it is.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Honestly, it's non-stop here.
It's like Clapham Junction.
Oh, it really is, but it's in Islington.
Mm.
I was talking about Elneny, wasn't I?
You were. And we were talking about the you know, his signing as, you know, whether it's a show of ambition or, you know, could we be doing more and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I said I think it might be a question of expedience about being able to do it quickly. And also, Arsene doesn't like to... I don't know. I mean, he doesn't. I don't think he wants to bring in a player who is a kind of 20, 30 million pound player alongside Coquelin. I think he's made his decision that Coquelin's his man. I think that's why someone like Morgan Schneiderlin wasn't brought in the summer. And I think he probably sees Elneny as a versatile midfielder. From the little we're hearing about him, he looks like someone who could play maybe a variety of roles in there. He's not purely a holding player. It feels like it's a bit of a body, really. It's an option rather than necessarily someone with potential without being someone who's ready to come in as a massive established star.
Yeah, I do wonder if he's somebody who was on our radar for the summer, because I think it's inevitable that Flamini, Rosicki and Arteta are going to leave. So we've got to, you know, we've got to fill those gaps to a certain extent. And I do wonder if he was somebody that we had earmarked for a summer signing, but given the circumstances, given the injuries, we've brought it forward. It strikes me that it might be a little bit like that. And I think as well, you're right to say that it's a signing that, because our need is so pressing, that it's one that we can get done rather than chasing a target who might be a bit more difficult to get. And I think if you're talking about Arsenal going out and looking for a player in midfield of the caliber of Ozil or Alexis, that equivalent kind of a player, I just don't think that player is available in January. So I think that level of expectation can't be met in this particular transfer window. And ultimately, I think it's a positive. If we're going to go out and bring in a player pretty much as soon as the window opens, then I think that's a positive thing, because we really, really need an extra body or two in midfield. And I do wonder if this is the first of maybe one or two.
I think, yeah, because, you know, if you're going to sign a player of that calibre in January, the top, top, top players, they very occasionally do happen. But when they do, it's on deadline day, because the selling clubs stretch it out in order to get the best fee that they possibly can. And, you know, Arsenal don't want to be in a position where they're having to do without for another 5 weeks. It's not something we can contemplate. So we've had to go out and get a deal done that means that we can bring someone in within the first few days of the window, could come straight into the squad, hopefully, and hit the ground running. Because, as you say, we are very, very short on bodies. I mean, you look at the substitutes bench against Bournemouth, I think we're all pleased to see the Jeff on there. But the fact that he and Alex Iwobi are both figuring in the 18 shows you that we are really light at the moment. And there's been bad injury news about the likes of Jack Wilshere and Danny Welbeck too. So
yeah.
I think you're right. I'm not necessarily sure. You know, the club seems to be briefing that this might be the only bit of business they're doing. That's been reported here and there. But it wouldn't surprise me if certainly their eyes are still very much on the market to see if another opportunity does come up, because we are light.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we've hopefully, assuming this goes through, addressed a pressing need. And then if there's something else that we can do during the transfer window, I think we'll do it. I mean, ultimately, we wait and see what the guy is like as a player before we make any judgment on him. You know, I think at this point we know better than to judge a player simply by his price tag or his profile. You know, players develop at different times. They, you know, we've seen someone like Lauren Koscielny, for example, who had one season in Ligue 1, and then, you know, he's blossomed into one of the finest central defenders in Europe. You know, there are plenty of examples of players like that who've come on and been given a chance at a big club. I mean, look at someone like Matic at Chelsea, for example, who was at Chelsea, sold, bought back after developing at a smaller club in a smaller league. And, you know, that's just the way it works sometimes. So I'm happy to wait and see what he's like. I agree as well, just in terms of what you're saying about Wilshere and Welbeck, a little bit worrying on those two, particularly Wilshere, no?
Yeah, particularly. I mean, it's difficult to be surprised, though, isn't it, about either of those two players, their absence being extended. I mean, it feels like they've just rolled on and on and on as a pair. And Wilshere, I think, worrying more sort of in the grander scheme of things. You know, when you begin to look at his injury record and the career that he's having, it's depressing, really. It's a real shame.
Yeah.
And you have to just hope against hope, really, that he can get over that, because he's heading Diaby Woods, isn't he, at the moment?
Yeah, it really is. Fingers crossed for him. Okay, well, look, will that do for part one? Should we take
a little break?
So.
Yeah? I feel like we've been going. Yeah,
we have been. I mean, we're probably going to have to cut out, you know, the 8 minutes where you were dealing with your cleaners and telephone and all that kind of stuff, which will bring it back down to a manageable level. But
I thought that was the highlights of the pod so far.
Well, for me, certainly. But I'm thinking of the listeners here.
Okay, fine.
Okay, all right. We'll take a break. We're back right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two, where we answer the questions sent to us on Twitter, at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. People have been asking lots of questions about Mesut Ozil, James.
You surprise me.
Mm.
You surprise me. I mean, look, it's understandable. We've all got questions. I've got a question about Mesut Ozil to start.
All right.
This is. I'm going to ask a question from me to you.
Okay, I do.
Hooray! It is a leap year next year, which I think on the 29th of February, a podcast co-host can ask another podcast co-host to marry them. It's like a special thing.
Well, we'll have to mark that down in the diary.
Look out for that.
Yeah.
My question to you is, if Arsenal were going into a big game, let's call it the Champions League final, and I told to you that you could have one of Mesut Ozil or Alexis Sanchez available for that game, but only one, who would you choose?
Oh, wow, that's really difficult. Because Alexis has this big game ability, doesn't he? He has this ability to get goals out of nothing when we're not playing particularly well. And, you know, you would have to assume that given the quality of the opposition that would get to a Champions League final, that could be a very useful useful thing to have. But, I, you know, maybe just at this moment in time, and of course my opinion could change given the way form fluctuates and all that kind of stuff, it'd be hard to look beyond Ozil because of just simply how creative he is and what he can bring to a team from set pieces, from open play. You know, he can split a defence, and maybe just on the day one of our strikers might not have the touch of a, you know, a rabid donkey and could score a goal or two. So at the moment, Ozil. What about you?
I think it's really difficult, actually, because I think Ozil, what he brings, you know, he's that sort of Piresian oil in the engine. I wonder if you take him out of the team, does it affect the functionality of the whole 11 dramatically? But then Alexis, as you say, is that guy who can just get you a goal from absolutely nowhere. He's an individualist who can do it on his own. So I don't know, that it was provoked by someone, I think, asked me on Twitter if we were a one-man team. And I thought, well, we're sort of very blessed now in that we've got two players who we could be accused of being a one-man team about.
We're a Siamese twins team.
Yes, finally, at long last. I honestly don't know. I think my gut would maybe still plump for Alexis, just because I still think that he might be more of a match winner. But Ozil is certainly doing a lot to change my mind in that respect, especially with performances like the one we saw against Bournemouth.
Okay.
So that was my little question to you.
All right, well, I've got one here that isn't from me, but it's from Paul.
Lazy, very lazy.
It's from at Erzen Spider, and he wants to know, given Ozil's assist masterclass, is it imperative Wenger does something regarding the front three during the transfer window?
Ooh, what he means in terms of adding to its quality so that all these millions of chances don't go, you know, untaken.
I'm guessing that's pretty much what he's saying. Yeah.
Right. I don't think it is imperative. If you look at the goals that Olivier Giroud is scoring, if you look at, you know, Theo Walcott's ability to score goals, I think we've got forwards who are capable of scoring the necessary goals to get us to the top of the Premier League. So I wouldn't go so far as to say it's imperative. Would it be nice? Certainly. And I do think there is an opportunity there, especially with Danny Welbeck's, you know, latest setback, seemingly an extended absence for him. I do think there is an opportunity there to go and bring someone in to supplement the attack. You know, Joel Campbell's been decent, but I struggle to believe there wouldn't be an upgrade available out there on the market. And I think, you know, yesterday, when you look at the team we had and the bench we had, there's not really a recognised centre-forward on the bench because Theo Walcott is out on the wing, Giroud's up top. Campbell's the closest thing you've got, I think, among the substitutes. And for a side chasing the league, that's not really ideal. That's not really good enough. So I don't think it's imperative, but I think if something comes up, they should definitely take the chance. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I said this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, didn't I? I think that if there was somebody available as a wide forward they could bring in, I think they'd be quite open to doing that. Yeah, I mean, it would be great to have somebody a little more clinical who could put away a few more of those chances. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what comes up in the January transfer window. As an aside, Pius Aguiar-Twum, who's at Randy De Gunner, he wanted to know, was that the best Ozil performance you've seen for Arsenal? For me, it is. I had 5 or 6 orgasms in the course of the game.
Wow, lucky man. I think it is, actually.
How many orgasms did you have? This is what I don't care what you think about his performance. How many
orgasms? Sorry, that's the question.
Yeah.
I just had one big one at the end. And I was happy with that. I was delighted with that outcome.
Yeah, none of your colleagues in the press box were, but hey.
No, I know. But, you know, what can you do? I was
Invert
sat next to Martin
pyramid,
Samuel.
Wilson.
I got overexcited. I think that was his best performance. I mean, it's difficult because, you know, do you have to factor in the quality of the position? Bournemouth aren't the best team we've played in the course of Ozil's time with Arsenal. They're not bad by any stretch, but they're certainly no Bayern Munich. But as an exhibition, let's say, of, you know, just to sit back and watch and enjoy, I don't think I've seen better from him, no. Yeah. What about you?
No, certainly up there with his best performances. And I think in the context of the game and how quickly it came after the Southampton game, I think that that just adds a layer of quality to what he did for me. It was brilliant.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
Okay, another Mesut question, because you can't have too many, as Arsene Wenger found out in his press conference. This is from Ankit. Oh, no, it's not. I lied. It's from, sorry, Ankit. We'll get to you, maybe. It's from Davy JG at Davy JG. And he asks, what is the meaning of Ozil's celebration, the thumb-sucking, three fingers pointing down action?
Well, is it an M?
Well, that's what I think.
Is it? I mean, I don't know. I guess the thumb-sucking is for some kind of...
baby friend of his?
Yeah, one of his kindergarten friends. I don't know, like a relative. Somebody said it was his niece or something. I'm not quite sure.
Does he not have kids? We don't know. I don't know.
I try not to concern myself with the personal lives of footballers and everything else because I just don't care.
Sure.
But I would imagine that the three fingers is an M, right?
Yeah, that's my opinion. I'm doing it now. I mean, yeah, I know this too. Is a podcast, it's guys. Like, everyone do it at home. Just put three fingers down.
Is it his middle finger that he brings up?
No, I think he holds his little finger in with his thumb, doesn't he?
Does he?
So it looks like a sort of a little alien claw. Maybe that's what it is.
It looks, actually, if you do it, it kind of looks a little bit like an elephant. If you just do it and, you know, hold your fingers straight down and then move your hand slightly up, it begins to look slightly
like
an elephant.
With a trunk.
Yeah, so maybe he likes elephants.
He loves elephants.
That's
of course
what
he
it
does.
Is.
And then the sucking the thumb, I don't know, maybe he just sucks his thumb.
Yeah.
It's a difficult habit to break, apparently. It can really damage your teeth, though.
It's just a real comfort for him. You know, there's 60,000 people looking at him. He might get shy, so he sucks his thumb to...
He doesn't like the noise of the crowd. It makes him nervous. So he pops his thumb in his mouth and thinks of his beloved elephants to bring himself a bit of comfort. That's why he doesn't like scoring goals. He's scared of the reaction. Mm. When it does happen, he regresses into this behaviour.
Yep, so that's it. Mesut Ozil loves elephants. That's the celebration.
Exactly.
All right, here's a question from Martin F. at MR Freaka. And he wants to know, if you could only sign one player in January and it had to be from another Premier League club, who would it be? And I'm going to write mine down. I'm going to write it down here. And there it is. There it is. I've written it down and I want to see if yours is the same because I think it might be.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I know what my heart says, Andrew.
Well, if I can see into your heart, then we've been doing this podcast too long. But go on, let's tell us.
Okay, well, it's a stupid one, really. It's a luxury one. It's one that doesn't seem to make that much sense at first glance. But mine would be Riyad Mahrez.
Okay, phew, I can't see into your heart.
Okay, what have you got?
I've got Lukaku.
Oh, I would love him.
Yeah.
I would love him. Oh, I tell you what, I think you can see into my heart. I think I'm not honest with myself, and you actually know me better than I know myself. Because I was tweeting about him the other day. I was on and banging on about Lukaku, saying he's worth, you know, 40 to 50 million quid of anyone's money. I do think that.
Yeah.
I think he is phenomenal.
You know,
he's just got so much power.
Yeah. You know, one of the problems, right, that we faced in the summer was the fact that there aren't any world-class strikers available to us. And the one that was there, Benzema, Arsene Wenger was looking at him going, you know, is 50 million worth, is it really worth it for a guy who might be better than Giroud, but maybe not by that much? You know, it's a huge amount of money to spend on a player who doesn't necessarily bring you to another level the same way that Ozil did or that Alexis did, right? So what's our next best option? I think we've spoken about this before, is to find a striker, find a player at the right age that we can then mold or who can develop into a world-class striker. And, you know, every time I look at him, he looks to me like a player who could fulfill that, who's got the potential to be that kind of player. And Giroud is, what, 29 now?
Yeah.
29, coming up on 30, you know, which is not over the hill by any stretch of the imagination. So
Lukaku, 22.
He's 22, and his goal-scoring record is phenomenal for a guy of 22. I think it's if you follow Daniel Story, who writes for Football 365 on Twitter, he has great stats about him and how, you know, by his age, the only players who had scored the amount of goals that, that he scored in top flight football are Messi and Ronaldo and somebody else.
Pelé, Maradona.
Yeah, exactly. His goal scoring record is phenomenal. And at 22, he's still got room for improvement. Undoubtedly, but this season it looks to me like he's taken a real step forward. I read something about him during the week. He said during the he was aware that his first touch wasn't great, so he spent most of his summer just playing football up against a wall, whacking the ball and improving his first touch and everything else. I watched the Everton Stoke game yesterday. He was really good. The goals he scored were fantastic, even if Everton ended up on the wrong side. So yeah, I'd love Lukaku. I think he's great.
I think he gets a bit of a rough time sometimes. People have criticised his first touch and some elements of his technical game, but they have really kicked on. And also, the sheer pace and power means that he just generates so many chances. Mm. This season, he's 19 appearances in the Premier League, 15 goals. And he's not playing in a particularly brilliant Everton side. It's not like they're running away with the league or anything like it.
Yeah, he's got Gareth Barry and Tom Cleverley providing him with passes. Imagine what Mesut Ozil could give him.
I mean, I have to say, Everton have got some really exciting young players all the way through their team. John Stones, great centre-half. Ross Barkley and Gerard Deulofeu, you know, very good young creative midfielders.
Yeah, but he's got a face of... He's just a bit too ratty, his face, Deulofeu.
He is, yeah. And he's a horrible diver as well, but very talented. And then Lukaku up top. They've got a great, promising spine to work with. And I just think, yeah, I think you're right. He's a player who is exploding, and I think that he would be a phenomenal asset. And let's not forget how funny it would be to get hold of him, having seen Chelsea let him go a few years ago.
I mean, you'd have to pay a premium price for him because you're getting him from another Premier League club. But
well, they paid close to £30 million, Everton. You know?
So what, you're adding £20 million at least onto that?
I think so, yeah.
But, you know, I think so. Probably... what would work to our advantage in that is that we would be a very, very attractive proposition for him. You know, it would be another step forward in his career, with no disrespect to Everton. You know, Arsenal have greater ambitions and greater potential. So I think, well, you know, if it was there to be done, I'd like that.
Well, I would put good money on Lukaku leaving Everton this summer simply because he changed agent not too long ago. He signed with, I think it's Mino Raiola, who represents Mario Balotelli and a few others. And he's, you know, known to be quite aggressive when it comes to moving his players on. So I think that's in the offing, to be honest with you. And I'd love to see Arsenal in the mix. Now, I don't... Whether or not it would ever happen, or whether in January, or whether or not he's a player Arsene Wenger even likes, I don't know. But when I look...
Yeah.
Go on, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, how could he not like him? I mean, when you look at what he can do, look at his size, look at his pace, look at his power, look at his finishing. To me, it just, he screams the kind of player that Wenger can polish into a world-class striker. He's done it before. You know, he could easily do it again with Lukaku. I don't know how he could look at him and not go, oh yeah, let's have some of that. Give me some of that, Lukaku.
I'd love that. I would absolutely love it. But listen... If we can't do that, I also think Riyad Mahrez would be a great addition. although it excites me less. I'd have less orgasms watching Riyad Mahrez than I would watching Romelu Lukaku.
Your colleagues in the press box will be glad of that.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure. I enjoyed that question. I could have talked about that all day.
Okay, well, get another question going.
This is from Andrew Jones at Drew Flaps, and he says, with Debussy... yeah, I know, Drew Flaps. We'll let that go. With Debussy, how did he get that nickname? With Debussy itching to leave and Wenger seeing Chambers as a DM now, which I don't know, I guess there's some debate about that, do we prioritise a new right back in January?
No, we don't prioritise a new right back in January. And I still think even if Chambers is playing midfield at the moment, I feel like his versatility might be the way that he gets more games for us. So if Debussy is to go in January, then it may well be a case that the manager views Chambers as a potential replacement at right back or backup for right back, which will give him more minutes. Because if we do make more signings in midfield, and if, you know, when Coquelin comes back, you'd have to think that Chambers' chances in there are going to be quite limited, even if he does do well, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we could be looking at Chambers still as a potential right back for the duration of this season anyway. What's interesting, and I heard this from a good place, is that Debuchy was supposed to start yesterday.
Ah.
And very late on, the decision was made to go with Bellerin instead. So I don't know what we can read into that, whether there is anything to read into that. But, you know, his absence from the first team squad was noticeable in the last two games. He wasn't in the squad for Man City and he wasn't in the squad at Southampton. He was back in the squad yesterday against Bournemouth. He was supposed to start. He didn't start. Maybe something's going on there behind the scenes.
That does suggest something might have been, if not agreed, then sort of, you know, plonked on Arsene Wenger's desk to think about. It does feel like he's on the way out. It'll probably be a loan deal, I would imagine, until the summer and then reassess the situation. But it's an area that's interesting because, you know, everyone was, I think, kind of anticipating that Carl Jenkinson might come back and contend for a place there, but we spoke a couple of weeks ago, he's having a difficult time at West Ham. So, yeah, maybe there is room for an addition there, but I don't see that necessarily happening in January because once Elneny comes in, Chambers will be freed up to fill in at right back when required.
Yeah, I think that's the way it'll go, to be honest. Thoughts on Debuchy? What do we do? Is this a guy who's prioritising his international career over his club career?
It is, yeah, it is. But then I think, I don't know. I mean, he's clearly quite unsettled. You know, in the last few years, we haven't had too many players at Arsenal be quite as vocal as he has about his position in the squad. And you do wonder after a while, is that healthy? Is that a positive thing? Maybe perhaps, you know, if it's a situation where he's supposed to play games and then he's not, I kind of feel like maybe the relationship's already broken to an extent and Arsene Wenger feels that the best thing to do is to kind of clean it up and move on. It is a shame because It's pure misfortune, really. I mean, Hector Bellerin got his chance because Debuchy suffered some really unlucky injuries. I think had those not happened, he'd probably still be in the side. It's not like he ever performed particularly badly in that first season.
Yeah.
But I do feel like, it's just not worked out for him. And we know Arsene's got form for letting players move on when they want to. And I think he'll do the same with Debuchy this January.
Okay. Right. I've got two questions, right? One is a very quick one. It comes from Abhinav Ramnarayan, who's at Abhinav VR.
Okay.
And of course, we played Bournemouth last night. They had a player called Mark Pugh. And he says, is it possible to say Mark Pugh's name without going pew, pew, pew in your head, Star Wars style?
Well, let's give it a whirl, shall I?
Yeah.
Mark Pugh. No, it's not possible. As soon as I said it, I was on Tatooine straight away.
Pew, pew, pew.
It's just exactly that.
Yeah.
I was deflecting shots away with a lightsaber, which frankly I'd like to see Peter Cech attempt sometime soon. Now that he's got the clean sheet record, let's have a go at that.
All right. My second question then comes from, here it is, actually, bizarrely, the Jedi Gunner. Wow.
Come on, that's not coincidence. That's the Force at work.
Sure, that must be it. I can feel the Force flowing through me. Or I haven't been in the bathroom yet. But anyway, he wants to know, what has been your Arsenal highlight of the 2015 calendar year and why?
I mean, winning the FA Cup, undoubtedly, because it's the FA Cup and we won it.
Yep.
And we won it in serious style as well. It wasn't after the agony of the previous final against Hull, this was a real showcase and it was a fantastic performance, fantastic win. Probably the Alexis Sanchez goal at Wembley in the FA Cup final was my highlight of the year.
All right. I've just noticed that he actually said, what has been your Arsenal BPL highlight?
Oh, so here I'm guessing... go. Moving the goalposts.
Yeah. Well, that's that one out the window.
Let me have a think about that.
Yeah.
I'm tempted by... Do you know what? I'm tempted to go right back to January and the win at the Etihad because it felt like it was such a long time coming to get a result like that away from home against a big team. And we did it so well, so comprehensively. And it was kind of the birth of a new Arsenal team. That's how it felt to me. That Cazorla Coquelin engine room that seemed so unlikely just a matter of months before that. You know, Cazorla was absolutely brilliant that day and really established himself in that role. And I just thought there was a newfound solidity and strength about that side that if we do go on to be serious title contenders this year, I feel like it stems back to that, really. I feel like that was a real turning point for this team.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good one.
What about yourself?
I mean, it's hard to look beyond that one. And also, I really enjoyed the 4-1 game against Liverpool The way we dismantled them that day, I thought that was a sensational performance. So yeah, that was a good one. Obviously, the Manchester
home win
United
against
game.
United.
Yeah, superb. So yeah, there have been some good days. It's been worked out, of course, that if there were a trophy for the calendar year, we would be the team holding that trophy aloft now, having the open top bus parade going, calendar year champions, yay! But there isn't. So we've had a good 2015 all in all in terms of the Premier League. Some disappointing results, but for the most part, we've performed very admirably in the BPL.
Very well so indeed. This dictionary I've read, it hasn't had much effect on me. I'm talking absolute nonsense at times. Okay, this is a hypothetical, and I know how you've got mixed feelings about those, but I do think it's an interesting one. Kieran Evans at Kieran Evans 46 says, if you had the final say, imagine that world, would you end Arsene's contract a year early if it would guarantee Pep Guardiola as Arsenal's next manager? Because there have been a couple of stories in Build about, you know, Arsenal making a little bit of contact with Guardiola. I have to say, I'm not sure how much credence I give that.
None, but absolutely none. He's going to Manchester City. It's nailed on 100%. There's no question about it. It's nailed on.
However,
we're talking hypothetical. Look, I think if a manager like Guardiola became available, I think you've got to go for him. I mean, the worry is, of course, Arsene Wenger's got one more year left on his contract, and it's who is going to be available to take over at that point, assuming that Arsene Wenger calls it a day at that point.
Well, I'm still in there's another contract in it camp. I think he'll sign a new contract still.
But, you know, if push came to shove, I mean, it's like somebody says to you, you've got, I don't know, let's say you've got Theo Walcott doing very well, scores you 15, 20 goals a season, but do you get rid of him to bring in Lionel Messi? Maybe, yeah.
You know, maybe.
You know.
Maybe.
So it's one of those, as a hypothetical, yes, of course. In reality, it's not going to happen because Guardiola's going to Manchester City.
That is true. It'd be not, do you know what, in a way, Arsene Wenger wins the league, calls it a day, goes out on a high, Pep Guardiola's unveiled the next day. That wouldn't be a bad week, would it?
No, it wouldn't be a bad week at all. But it's not going to happen.
It won't happen, no. Right, any more from you?
Any more from me? I think I have got one here. Okay, I did have one interesting one here. Hang on, I'm just going to try and find it. I can't find it. Where the hell has it gone?
I've got one if you want.
Yes. Okay. Let's do it till I find this one.
Okay. John Strobel at Gunner Runner IU. He asks, my friend got me the third kit jersey for Christmas. What should I do?
Break all ties with that friend.
Mm-hmm. Kill your friend?
Or? No. Come
Sorry,
on.
I went too hard, guys.
But I would, if I could, hack his Facebook account and post some particularly nasty stuff that may well impact his job, his life, his family life, could end his marriage, see him never ever see his children again. You know, something small like that, because I think that's a proportionate response to that kind of, what would you say? That's an act
it's
of aggression.
It's monstrous behaviour, really.
Yes, it's an act of war, essentially, buying somebody that third kit. So, yeah, what I would do is expand as much energy as possible into ruining this man's life without causing him any physical harm. I mean, if he wanted, in the end, to throw himself off a tall building because everything has gone to shit.
That's his prerogative.
Exactly. That's down to him, and he'll stand there and he'll be looking down below at the street going, how on earth did I get to this point in my life? Everything was going so well. Oh, yes. Now I remember. I bought that guy the third kit for Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be my thinking on it.
I think that seems eminently sensible.
Mm.
Did you find your question?
I did, yeah. It comes from Eastand, at Eastand14. He wants to know, if you could re-sign one of the following players in their peak this January, who would it be? You have three options. Oh, okay. I like it.
Stepanovs.
The hoovering has started. I like
it. Yep. I'm not going to stop her because, you know, we're close to the end now, guys.
We are. So, look, the three players were Edu, Silvinho, or Eduardo.
Oh, what a lovely little selection. I wonder what on earth has made him pick that little trio.
Maybe he's Brazilian.
Maybe he is. Edu Silvino Eduardo.
Mm.
I don't think we need Silvino right now.
No.
I think we've got a terrific left-back in Nacho Monreal and decent backup in Kieran Gibbs. Eduardo could certainly have a place. Edu, I mean, central midfield, we're very light, aren't we? And he, you know, at his best, was a very, very good, very effective player. Excellent passer, could tackle as well. I think I'd go for Edu, you know.
Ooh.
I think I'd go for Edu. I just think, I don't know what Elneny's like. So Edu's a known quantity.
Right.
To shore up that midfield. But you're going to go for Eduardo, aren't you?
I am. I'm going forward crazy today.
Fox in the box. You want Eduardo and Lukaku up front.
Yeah, I just think that, for example, if Eduardo had been presented with some of the chances that Ozil created last night, then, you know, he would have put at least two of them away. At least.
Bear in mind, this is peak Eduardo. This is pre-injury Eduardo.
Yeah, exactly. That brilliant spell he had where he'd sort of adapted to the English game. There was a great game at Everton, actually, if I remember. He played really well that night himself and could have been Bentner. Himself and Bentner playing up front. But anyway,
Eduardo scored twice, I believe.
Yeah, he had a great game that night and he was really, you know, blossoming into a fantastic forward, a fantastic finisher. So yeah, that Eduardo with those Ozil passes, bring it on.
Yeah, so that do you know what? I'm ditching Edu. I'm going Eduardo as well. I'm going to assume that Mohamed Elneny is the new Patrick Vieira and we have no more midfield requirements.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go with Eduardo. Let's
All
go for
right.
goals.
Come on. All right, is that it or do you have one more or are we done?
I'd have nothing else to give.
You got nothing.
Okay. I'm spent like that man at the end of the match yesterday after six orgasms.
Yeah, there's an image. It really is. Yeah. And of course, we know that you record in your underpants. So your cleaner is in for one hell of a surprise when she gets to your area of the house.
Absolutely. When she walks in, what a scene will befall in front of her. Befall, behold, blah, 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 blah. Guys, we need to read this dictionary and read this thesaurus.
Yes.
Figure out what's going on.
Really?
If we want to have a podcast, I need to know what words are.
Yeah. And how to use them.
Ideally, in the correct order.
Yes. When do we play next? We play Newcastle.
Saturday in Newcastle, yes.
Saturday, Newcastle. All right.
So I imagine we'll be back to Mondays.
Back to Mondays? Back to
January
Mondays?
January 4th.
Absolutely.
2016, the future.
We will talk to you next year, and we'll talk to you on what will be episode 100 of the Arscast Extra. Boom!
Imagine it.
It's
going to be special.
The future is now. Except it's also the future.
100. How many minutes have we done of this? Imagine it.
Well, 60.
What percentage of our lives?
Yeah, generally between, I would say they average out about 50 minutes.
Right.
So that's 150s. 5,000 million.
I could never do that. So it's 5 gazillion.
5 gazillion minutes.
5 gazillion minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, I guess I would like to wish everybody a very happy new year. We'll talk to you next year. Have a great one. Thank you for being here with us throughout 2015. Thank you for listening. And of course, if you want to leave a rating or a review on iTunes, that would be great, James. I don't know if you noticed, but a couple of times we've hit the top 10 on iTunes. So if people rate and review and download through iTunes and subscribe through iTunes, we could get way up there. We could get to like 7 or 6 even.
That would be brilliant. We're pushing for the top 4, guys. You know that's where we belong. We're going to snatch 4th. I know it.
All right. Well, thank you very much indeed. We'll catch you on the next Arscast Extra. Until then, cheers.
Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.